This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Joyce Goh, and with me is Julian Ng. You're listening to Pressing Matters Right Now, the show that goes behind the headlines where we speak to members of the press on their stories. Joining us today is P. Gunasingaram, independent business analyst and columnist at Malaysia Kini. Welcome to the show, Guna, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, you recently wrote an article entitled Who's Behind Gangsters Ratcheting Up Racial Tensions? I mean, your articles cover a range of issues from ICERT to the unrest over the Subang Temple, and you say that these situations are linked to gangster politics. Can you elaborate on what you mean?
Well, once you look at ICERT, which is the International Convention for the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination, this appeared not to be ratified because of pressure from UMNO PAS, you know, the old gangster-style politics that especially UMNO was engaged in, whereby there are threats of violence even in another May 13, and then the former Home Minister, which is Tan Sri Muhyiddin's predecessor, Ahmad Zahid Hamidi, he even said that the Malays will go amok if this ICERT was not ratified. But ICERT actually does not affect the rights of Bumiputras or special privileges for Bumiputras in any way. You know? So that fact was not properly communicated by the government to the people. You know? And there was actually, despite what Prime Minister Dr. Mahathir Mohamad says, there was no need for an amendment to the federal constitution to ratify ICERT. So there was an announcement for a demonstration on December 8, but despite the government not ratifying it, the demonstration still goes ahead. And what is happening in this case here is they want a celebration of the non-ratification of ICERT and those behind the demonstrations. So it's not very good when the government buckles down to these kind of threats of violence. No, you should be actually taking a stand against those who make these kind of allegations. And then you have the temple riots. Basically, it started when 50 Malay youths rampaged inside a Hindu temple. And according to Tan Sri Muhyiddin, the Malay thugs were hired by lawyers acting for developers, but lawyers and developers denied involvement, you know, raising the question of who was behind those Malay thugs. You know? So are they getting encouraged by the government backing down on commitments it made to sign up for ICERT? You know?
How widespread is this gangster culture? I mean, you know, why is it, do we have this?
I think if you look at what the former Home Minister, Zahid Hamidi, said, that he actually openly endorsed a Malay gang known as Tiga Line, which is actually outlawed by the police. And he described himself, he described the gangsters as being part of them, meaning UMNO at that point of time. So I think this is actually quite worrying for the previous Home Minister to have had such close contacts with gangs. And this is something I think the police will have to deal with when they investigate such cases. Now, it's very important that they investigate these cases properly. And also, I think it is important that the IPCMC, the body which is supposed to be overseeing police actions, is set up and set up independent of police so that there is actually a watchdog over the police themselves.
So is there any kind of investigation that's taking place right now to censure gang activities and what happened with the temple incident?
I think basically the government's position has been that this is criminal, this is not racially motivated, although it has become in effect a sort of a racial issue because of the underlying elements behind it, for instance, like 50 Malays moving into a Hindu temple. So, but the government is saying that these are people hired by lawyers who are representing their developers, but there does not seem to be very much more clarity than that. You know? So, in the first place, it is important that people follow the law. You know? So, even if there is a consent order in this case from the courts for the temple to be vacated by a certain date, if if those who are in control of the temple don't do that, then they, you have to go back to the legal means to get them evicted. You know, you get the police to evict them. You know, you get the court to compel them to move out.
Mm. You know, but that's not so easy, right? Because there's always this clash between business interests and communal interests. Mm. And this temple, if I'm not wrong, is apparently 100 years old. So do you think that there should be much bigger picture policies, for instance, when there are such clashes between business and community, right, to look into the interests of the community first? Because this is not easy. Money has passed hands. The deal has been signed and sealed. You know, what do you then do with a 100-year-old temple?
Okay, in this case here, there are conflicting reports about this as well. There seems to be widespread agreement that this temple existed in other forms as a place of worship for over 100 years, although the building may not have been put up as long as 100 years ago. So the thing is, this is a long-standing problem. It started when the land was owned by Consolidated Plantations before, which was Saim a unit of Saim Dabi. Yep. Yes. Mm-hmm. And then this company then sold the land over to a unit of MCT, you know, with the temple still there, but without any kind of agreement being made as to who should own the temple and who has got ownership of it. And then I think there was a long period of, back and forth. And eventually there was a consent order by the court, you know, that this will revert to the developer. And the developer apparently undertook to relocate the temple at a different place, build the temple and provide $1.5 million in funds, you know. This is all from reports about the issues.
Mm. Yeah, so MCT actually, its subsidiary One City Development has issued a statement to gain, you know, they again denied that, you know, it's involved in hiring unruly people to instigate riots and civil unrest, you know, because of this moving of the temple. Actually, one question I have is, do you think, is there a way where they can, instead of moving the temple, can you build around it? For example, Mid Valley.
That's one example. Thing that has been suggested. And the interesting side development is some tycoons who all happen to be Chinese, I think so far, have raised more than $2 million in funds to buy over the land from the developers so that the temple can remain where it is. And then so it's estimated that the land costs about 14 over million. You know?
1.4, is it?
Yeah, 1.4.
Okay, so they're 2 million right now. They need another 12 million more. That's not very pricey, right? I'm sure someone can just write a check.
It's not, but usually in these kind of cases, say, for instance, when Consolidated Plantations sells to MCT, for instance, the unit of MCT, this land, then it is understood that they know that this temple issue is unresolved. So there will already be a discounted price for the land because the temple is located on it. So so perhaps even MCT, the unit of MCT, which is involved in the development there, can take up some of the costs of the temple. But again, this complicates the legal part of it, is if that there is actually a consent order.
Okay.
You know? So I think one has to go back to that consent order eventually to resolve this problem on a legal basis, legally.
I mean, very quickly, I think we need to break soon. But, you know, the statement that came out of the Prime Minister is that from now on, all places of worship have to get government approval. Do you think this kind of policy will sort of avoid this kind of situations in future?
I think it would, but the problem is a legacy issue. You know, I think some people estimate that there are as much as 29,000 temples in Malaysia, Hindu temples. And much of these temples have not got a land title. So many of them were in estates. So most of the estate workers at that time were Indians from South India, almost all of whom were Hindus. So temples were erected, and then the estates were vacated, and then the problem of what to do with many of these temples arose. And then the old practice was if you saw a tree and if you thought that the tree was holy, you would set up a shrine there, and the shrine becomes a temple. And then there's again the issue of it might be state land. You know, so how do you deal with this? You know, this has been this place has been there for decades. You know, so what do you do to solve this? So it's actually quite a complicated issue to handle. And I certainly think in future there should be some kind of orderly development of temples.
We're speaking to P. Gunasekaran, independent business analyst and columnist at Malaysia Kini. After this, we'll continue a discussion on his articles on issues from ISIS to the unrest over the Subang Temple. So stay tuned to The Morning Run, BFM 89.9. Good morning, I'm Joyce Goh, and with me, Julian Ng. You're listening to Pressing Matters Right Now, the show that goes behind the headlines where we speak to members of the press on their stories. Today, we have P. Gunasekaran, independent business analyst and columnist at Malaysia Kini. Earlier, Guna, we were talking about your articles covering issues from ISIS to the unrest over the Subang Temple. So what are your views on the government's, you know, the way they've handled the issue? Do you think they've acted quickly enough?
There is some dispute about whether the police came onto the scene early enough, but there is no real clarity about what exactly happened so far. You know, so in fact, a number of things are vague about how the whole thing happened. But I think if you are talking about a solution to the problem, we need to bear some things in mind now. One, to prevent escalations, impartial investigation is necessary. So you need to treat everybody equally under the law as far as this is concerned, and not give any party any kind of special preference, which seemed to be done previously under the previous government, you know, when you have hardliners, say, sometimes bursting into forums and things like that and disrupting other people's meetings, and nobody ever heard about them being charged, you know. So anyone who breaks the law must be equally treated and must be equally severely treated. So no one should be allowed to break the law, and no justification should be made for breaking laws. You know, the government should be firm about taking action as far as this is concerned. And the courts also should take seriously such incidents, especially those which have, which can cause public disorder. And so anyone found guilty of these things, heavy sentences to be meted out to them so that there is real deterrence to stop them from behaving this in this manner in next time. So the other thing is enforcement authorities such as the police should be in charge of enforcing court orders with some amount of restraint and a reasonable time given to remove property and relocate occupants and provide humanitarian help, you know, for those who might be involved. On no account should others, you know, especially developers, should employ thugs to take upon this role. So that should be a complete no-no as far as that is concerned. You know, yeah. I think the other thing is the rule of law. No? All right, okay. What do you do in a situation where there's a court order, for instance, and the courts have already issued a consent order in this case, whereby the temple is supposed to hand over the property to the developers under the consent agreement. So then unless there is further appeals to the Court of Appeal and to the Federal Court, you know, as part of due process, then this should actually take place. You know? So it's interesting to note a proposal by Attorney General Tommy Thomas to mediate under Section 9, Act 349 of the Government Proceedings Act 1956. So although he offered this, there has been little reports about this, but I think this may actually be the solution for this particular issue. Because Thomas noted that the underlying dispute arises from a consent order in court. So in a situation like this, the AG may institute a suit to help settle disputes which involve public, religious, social or charitable financial institutions. So in this case here, he has actually invited the parties concerned to get in touch with him. So this process may continue. And this may well be the best way to settle the dispute in a peaceful, amicable way, in accordance with the law, without ratcheting up further racial tension. Mm-hmm. I think there is a need for temperatures to calm down and for calm and rational to prevail. But in this environment,
yes, for sure, we need to have calm minds right now. And notwithstanding the proposal, the out that was suggested by the Attorney General, Do you think that this relates to the whole bigger picture of the ICERT and a general sense that we need some kind of racial unity policy, reconciliation policy? Because if this was arguably a higher value project, like let's say the Penang UNESCO Heritage Site, right? And if that's about to be destroyed, then because there's so much commercial value added to it, people start paying attention. Another example, environmental protection, right? Mm-hmm. If you're at risk of damaging the environment irreversibly, then you'll pay attention. But here we have a communal asset, right? Asset, for the lack of a better word, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not accorded the same kind of consideration as you would the other. So maybe there needs to be some kind of a policy, a reconciliation. And the non-ratification of the ICERT, I think, is a huge missed opportunity.
Yes, I think although there seem to be some links, I think it is not so closely linked with ICERT, but I think in this case here, the common link between the two is the threat to take the law into your own hands. So that was the case with ICERT, we will run amok if you ratify ICERT, kind of a thing. And then in the case of the temple issue, it actually happened. The law was, somebody else took the law into their own hands, by trying to force those who were in the temple out of the temple, and so that they can take control of the temple. So the key thing is following the law on all sites. Even if somebody say attacked you, for instance, it doesn't give you the right to go and damage someone else's property. So that too is something that you would have to look at. But in the particular case of temples, it's a very historical kind of issue. Temples sprouted up all over the place, during the time that much of the land was estates,
And the question then becomes whether we should celebrate this kind of diversity or control them, right? It's very contrasting responses to that, what is supposed to be multiculturalism in Malaysia.
I think we need to take a measured approach to this. On the one hand, you have this problem where temples are there, but there is no land ownership, no titles, no legal ownership. But that is as a result of a historical accident. Okay, in future, like the PM says, you should have approvals for temples coming up and things like that. But that's the future, The temples are already there, you have to solve that problem first, And it needs a soft touch to be able to solve this problem, because they are. It's a fact that these temples have existed there for decades. I think in the UK you have things like, I think they call it adverse possession in law, whereby if you are holding on to a property for a very long time, then you already have a claim to the land on which you have. So I'm not sure whether the law is similar in Malaysia or not, but at least there should be some consideration given to the fact that these places of worship have been there for a long time. So you have to, the best way is to negotiate and to come to some kind of arrangement for it.
Yeah, work around it, as we mentioned, as what happened. That's why this case came out on Mid Valley and how they built around the temple. Well, we've been speaking to P. Gunasekaran, independent business analyst and columnist at Malaysia Kini, on his recent articles. Thank you, Guna, for your time.
Thank you.
That's all we have on Pressing Matters on the Morning Run here today. Stay tuned for the 10 a.m. news after this, followed by Enterprise at BFM 89.9. Signing off for the Morning Run is Julian Ng and myself, Joyce Goh, at BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.